Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Deviant Legion Network and from ISF, and we're here in my little corner today. Today is a very, very special day to me. It is the 21st of December, and it is Frank Zappa's birthday. And so Patrick, my cohort, say hello, Patrick.
Hello.
There he is. We decided to do something special because we're both big fans, and I also wanted to, well, I'll explain this. I'm really hooked on reaction videos, and there's a group called Side After Dark, who is a local Brooklyn music group with Sifa Graffiti and Dan Berg. And I reached out to them because they do a lot of reaction videos on Frank Zappa. And we're very, very happy to have Dan Berg with us tonight from Sight After Dark. Say hello, Dan.
Hello. Very happy to be here. Very excited.
Good, 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 good. Glad to have you. So Patrick, I'm going to go to you first. How did you first get into the music of Frank Zappa?
Well, the first time I got into Frank Zappa, I kind of went in two phases. The first phase was when I was in high school. I just blindly purchased four of his albums on cassette. I bought Freak Out, Uncle Meat, Overnight Sensation, and Ship Arriving Too Late to Save a Drowning Witch. And I mean, there were no reason that I was buying any of these albums. I maybe because of Valley Girl, I might have bought Ship Arriving Too Late, but probably not because that song wasn't even big in my wheelhouse at the time. They were just, I think, four albums they had at the Sound Warehouse, and I bought them blind, and I listened to them, and I really liked Freak Out, and I really liked all of it, but Uncle Meat was the one that I was sort of really perplexed by. I loved it, but I couldn't quite place it. I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know exactly what it was, and so, you know, that was my senior year in high school. Those four tapes got played quite a bit, and then I didn't really explore any more of his catalog until much later. I got into him kind of through the back door because I got into Captain Beefheart really big. And I, you know, collected everything that Beefheart did, and then that caused me to get Hot Rats and a few Frank Zappa albums that he appeared on. And when I heard Hot Rats, I was immediately just almost like the lights came on for me. And I then went on a quest to buy everything and absorb everything of Frank Zappa's that I could. And that was about 18 years ago or so. I remember because it coincided with beginning my oil and gas job. And I remember that was something that I did to really kind of get through the doldrums of those days, was to listen to that music on my headphones, and just because it was so layered and dense, I could get lost in it while I was doing this kind of, you know, terrible work. So, but I've been a, you know, massive fan ever since.
So for me, it goes back quite a ways. In 1972, my folks bought a music store in Bradford, Pennsylvania, and we moved up there. I was 14 years old. And the store was on West Washington Street, and about four doors down from us was a head shop run by a guy by the name of Jerry O'Wallaby. And Jerry, of course, I was into albums, and I loved music. My mother was a music teacher. I'll get into that later. But so I'd go to this head shop with all these records, and Jerry introduced me to two of my favorite people in music, one of them being Frank Zappa. The first album I ever bought was a compilation album called Mother Mania on Verb Records. And the thing about it was I heard so much 20th century music out of it, because I grew up in a household where basically when I was very young, all we listened to was Broadway and classical music. I found out the way to piss off my parents was to listen to 20th century classical music. So already I was there. And from there on in, I became an absolute fan. And just for the record, the other group that Jerry introduced me to was the Kinks. But for me, it was Zappa. And ever since that time up until now, and that's now 50 years, I'm a huge fan of Frank Zappa. I saw him 5 times live. I was actually up on stage once in Edinburgh. Just absolutely just flat out love the man, think the man's a genius, period. So now we're going to go over to Dan. And so as I said, when I first saw you and Sifa was doing these reaction videos, and of course you were doing Zappa reaction videos, and I found it really interesting to see a younger generation react. So tell us how you started all the reaction videos and how you came to listening to Zappa, and just your overview of what you think of him.
Well, as far as the reaction videos, we kind of just fell backwards into it, honestly. It wasn't anything that was ever planned by us. We never thought that this would be something that we ended up doing. But long story short, like you said, so we're a band in Brooklyn, and, before the city shut down, we would be playing open mics like 3-4 nights a week, just like really being out there as much as possible. And then obviously we got to a point where we couldn't go out and play shows anymore. So we were just kind of like, well, what are we going to do to continue, moving forward and not just stop? Because we weren't just going to stop. That didn't feel like an option. So basically we just realized we had to move online if we were going to do anything, because nothing was open. So we started doing a bunch of different things, basically just throwing shit at the wall. I mean, we were doing a bunch of YouTube videos. It's like we were doing like comedy skits. We were doing like, we're playing live our music. We were doing all kinds of things. And then one time we decided, hey, let's do a reaction video. Let's see if we're any good at that. So we actually went on like our social media and we're like, hey guys, if we did a reaction video, what's something that you would want to see? And the first reaction we actually got was for Steely Dan. And we hadn't really known Steely Dan at all, but we got into that and we did a reaction to their song Peg. And before that, all the other videos we did probably got like 50 views in like a month or so. And we did one reaction to Peg and it got like 1,000 views in like a week. So we were just kind of like, oh, maybe we should go down this path a little bit more. So we just started doing a bunch of more reactions. We started doing a bunch of Steely Dan albums, reacting to the whole album. We did like 7 Steely Dan albums. And then as we did that, more and more people kind of discovered us from those. And we started getting like a lot of people requesting certain songs that we were going to do. So we eventually had to figure out a way to kind of streamline it. And we ended up signing up. We have this service called Patreon. Basically people subscribe to us and we made it so like, subscribe to the Patreon and we'll do a reaction request for you. So we were doing this for a couple months and eventually somebody said Andy by Frank Zappa. And I had known of Frank Zappa before. Somehow I knew his mustache. I really don't know how the hell I did, because I hadn't heard any other. I really didn't know how I knew it. Like, I guess my parents probably listened to him at some point, but I knew his face, and that was pretty much it. I hadn't heard any music from him at all until somebody requested that we did Andy for these reaction videos. And we did it, and we were both just blown away. Obviously, I mean, this is on YouTube. Anyone can watch this, our reaction to Andy. That was the first one we did. It was the first time I ever heard Zappa music in my life, and we recorded it, so that's kind of cool. We were just blown away by how different it was from everything else that we had heard from that era, and just by that song, honestly. And then because that did well, so many more people started doing Zappa requests, and it kind of became like a feedback loop of Zappa. So then, you know, more and more Zappa, and then we're starting to listen to more of him, and we're starting to realize, like, wow, this is just a genius musician. I mean, he covered so much ground. He did so many different things. It's just impossible to really categorize what he was able to do. And, you know, we're still – I mean, we've only been – I'm trying to think of when that was. It's probably been less than a year we've even have listened to Zappa. So it's like our understanding of him is still, you know – increasing as time goes on. You know, we've done a few of albums from him. We did all of Joe's Garage, all three parts. We did Apostrophe. We did a bunch of other songs. And it's funny because everyone keeps saying, like, oh, you guys are just starting to get to it. You got a lot more to go. And we've done like 100 songs already. And we're kind of like, yeah, whatever. And now as time goes on, we're like, wow, we really are just touching the surface. Like, we have so much more of Frank to listen to and discover. And that's kind of one of the exciting things about it, honestly.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. So Pat, if you were to say to Dan, or you take a look at how you've reacted to his music and that, what do you want to say about Zappa, the artist, and that to, you know, if you're talking to somebody who doesn't know him and that sort of thing, how would you introduce him to somebody?
Well, That's a good question. I do have to say that it sounds like you keyed in on that the cult of Steely Dan is very similar and in its fervency to the cult of Frank Zappa, because being a Frank Zappa super fan, I'm also a Steely Dan super fan, so there's a lot of overlap in those two groups. I guess though, there's just nothing like Frank Zappa. There's no other rock musician that really did music like him. Even if you take the sort of what I used to think of as very dense and layered stuff like Electric Light Orchestra or even the rock opera stuff from The Who, that all seems so silly compared to what Frank Zappa was up to. I mean, in all honesty, I would also say that if you are in love with shredding guitar solos, I don't know of another guitarist like Frank Zappa. He is my favorite guitarist. His stuff is just so inventive, and it's got an energy to it that's really, really something. And the denseness of his work is also the thing that I would try to impress on somebody getting into the work. It's like an adventure when you go through Frank Zappa's music. I mean, it really was going through it and discovering it slowly, album by album, and learning the different, you know, facets of his career and phases of his career and how they all connected together and told one big story. Was really one of the most wonderful things I've ever, you know, done in my adult life as it relates to sort of like, you know, just pop culture stuff. I mean, I really came out the other end a completely different person in the way I thought about popular music and rock music in particular. And so Frank Zappa is just a really kind of monumental figure in my life in terms of just how he sort of expanded how I thought of popular music, really. I mean, in short, there's more to it, but it, you know, in short, he more than the Beatles, more than any, and I think I probably have to say that, you know, in terms of raw enthusiasm, I think probably the Rolling Stones I will always love more than anybody else. But, you know, they have their limits as to what you can do with them. Frank Zappa seemed limitless. His music just seemed to have no boundaries, and it's just such a shame he died so young, because who knows where he was going. And you listen to the last albums of his, Civilization especially, he was heading into a period that was just so exciting, and, you know, the adventure really never stopped with him. And the thing I would try to impress on somebody is this: it's like a giant sacred text.
I would agree with that. There's a couple of things you mentioned that I want to expand on. One is what he used to call the project object, which was that everything he did was one piece, whether it was the music, whether it was the videography that he did, because he always taped everything. You know, it was all this one piece that he believed in, and that's what he called the project object. Okay, the other thing is the depth of his music. One of the things that I don't know if anyone has seen the most recent documentary, Zappa by Alex Winter, but he had Zappa's vault. As of right now, from what I understand, as of 3 weeks ago, I read an article, there are still over 350 hours of recorded music that has not been released. There are at least 120 pages of manuscript that have never seen the light of day. Okay, the man never stopped, ever. And going back to what I was saying, when as far as his classical, his 20th century classical references, and you go into people like Conlon and Caro and that sort of thing, he introduced me to so much 20th century music I didn't even know. Okay, and then, you know, with his doo-wop interest and everything else. And then, of course, the people he worked with, Johnny Guitar Watson, who was a blues and R&B person from the 50s. You know, I got introduced to so much music through him that it is an amazing thing. Now, Dan, do you know any of this, or is this new to you as far as what we've talked about so far?
I do know a lot of it. I did see the Zappa documentary from Alex Winter, so I did watch that. So I know a lot of these things, but, I mean, I just had to agree with, like, everything that you said. I mean, I don't even know if – you know, I think about this all the time, because now that I know Zappa and, like, you know, I'll be around people that don't know Zappa, and I'm like, if I wanted to explain what Zappa was, there's no way I could do it with one song. There's no way I could do it with one album. It's just such a you know, he was just able to put out so much work, and it was just so, like, all-encompassing, and it's so hard to even try to explain to somebody that's new, which is crazy to me, because I was new to it, like, literally a year ago. But, yeah, I don't know, all good points that you guys have made, and it's hard for me to even think of him as, like, when we first started doing it, I was thinking of him as, you know, as a rock guy, but now I just think of him as, you know, a master composer. Rock, to me, is just, like, one aspect of it. It's not even... I don't know. I feel like calling him like a rock star is just like selling him short, you know?
I would agree with that. How about you, Pat? Would you agree with that statement?
Oh yeah, definitely. That's not a big enough term for what, you know, Frank Zappa did. And yeah, no, rock star, rock musician is not quite right. I mean, he's a singular musician. Composer, is what he wanted. That's, you know, according to the documentary, according to Gail, and that's fair enough. I think that fits him.
You know, and I would also call him the most notable composer of the 20th century, and that includes people like Schoenberg and Stravinsky and Bartok and so on. Because he melded so many different styles into something so unique. I told a story, or I'm going to tell a quick story. My mother was a music teacher, and I was growing up, and I was like 16, 17 years old. I was in high school. And she really didn't like me listening to Zappa because of the language and the stuff he talked about. Now, the one nice thing about my family is I could always argue my point. They wanted me to be a lawyer. I disappointed them greatly. I just want you to know that. So I sat down with my mother and I argued, and I had her listen to stuff. And at the end of it, she said, okay. She says, you write, and she's teaching general music to middle school kids, you know, 6th to 8th grade. She says, get me a syllabus. Write me out a lesson plan, and I'll teach him. But it has to be all instrumental. And I did that, and to my mother's credit, for 10 years after that, that was part of the curriculum she taught. And when I can convince my mother, and trust me, she was a pit bull. She was hard to convince to do that. I think that really says something. So anyway, what I thought we might do, Dan, is sort of – now, this is why I wish Sipa was with us, that we're going to pick out a song that I don't think you've heard. And out of the two songs you put together, Pat, I'm going to go with Baltimore, if that's okay with you. All right?
That's, yeah, that's fine. That's cool. So, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool
yeah.
for me.
So this one, Dan, we're going to listen to right now is What's New in Baltimore. So sit back, enjoy.
All right. Thank you.
There you go. What's new in Baltimore? Well, have you ever heard that one before, Dan?
So funny story. So we've never reacted to this, but one of the people that subscribes to us on Patreon, Richie G, shout out to Richie G, he's friends with Ray White, and he actually hooked us up with tickets to see the Zappa Band when they were in New York a few months ago. So I actually have seen this song live.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, nice. Nice.
Yeah. So obviously it's great. It's funny because I remember at the show, they said, oh, we're going to play What's New in Baltimore, and everyone went crazy. And I was like, oh, that's one that I don't know. I don't know. And then they played it, and obviously it was great.
So Pat, why did you pick this particular tune?
Oh, I like this one a lot because it's a song that's sort of split in two, and in the first half of it you have his very unique composition, very precision-like band that sort of reminds me a lot of his 74 band. The percussion reminds me a lot of Ruth Underwood. But obviously I think the get in the song is that incredibly soaring guitar solo that makes up the second half of the tune. And whenever, it's not a song that pops up a lot in his live albums. Although I haven't checked the last probably, I don't know, five compilation live albums, it may be on there, but this was not a song that would pop up a lot, and it's just I love it. I think it's a really kind of joyous tune after the first half, which is sort of weird and dark, but it sort of turns bright by the end of it, and this is one of my favorite solos of his, so that's probably why I chose it. And I like to actually, I gotta say, the album that it's on, it's from Frank Zappa Meets the Mothers of Prevention, which was sort of an album that was put together during his big porn wars era, and it's of historic interest, and it's sort of a transitional album where he's working his way away from sort of being a organic composer and working more with the synclavier as he did in his later career. So anyway. That's why I really dig this song.
Now, for me, one of the things that, if you listen to a lot of Zappa, he has this tendency, he loves the jazz waltz, and he loves that 3-4. And even in the first section of it, you can hear that along with the 5-8. Of course, I'm being the musician here, I'm sorry. But the thing is, I love how he molds the two parts together so they're seamless. That's really hard to do. Think about it for a second. It's like speaking two different languages at once and then molding it together. I find it absolutely just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And, I love that particular tune, and that is one of his great guitar solos. So let's talk about his guitar playing for a little bit. Dan, how do you look at his guitar playing as opposed to other great guitar gods and so on and so forth? How do you differentiate what Zappa does to somebody else?
That's a great question, and it's something I think about a lot when we're doing these videos, especially when we're doing live ones and we can actually see him playing live. So I've been playing guitar since I was 11. I'm only 27, but that's way more than half my life. So I've been learning guitar for many, many years now, and listening to Frank makes me kind of want to unlearn guitar, because I feel like when I'm listening to other guitarists, we'll say Jimmy Page, for example, he can be playing with emotion, but he's typically in similar, scales and patterns of notes. Whereas Frank, I feel like it's almost like he's creating a new scale for every song. Like he doesn't live in the box. You know what I mean? He reaches for notes that might, some other people might be scared to really play. They might think they wouldn't fit in, things like that, but he just goes for it. He just, I don't know. It's just so impressive that he's able to just feel so free while he's playing guitar. There's a certain, you know, a level of freeness with it, especially as opposed to, you know, the structure of the rest of the band that just gives it like a quality that is so hard to quantify as far as comparing to other guitarists. It's like, you can listen to it and you just know that it's him. Like, he doesn't sound like anybody else, and the guitar just speaks through him, or vice versa, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, no, and that's a good observation. Pat, what would you say to that? What makes Zappa different as a guitar player as opposed to somebody else?
I think, you know, it's a combination of, excuse me. One is that, you know, you hear a lot of technically brilliant guitarists who can play, you know, very, very fast, and they can shred. You know, Frank Zappa's guitar playing, his guitar style, it's very fast, but it also sounds very dangerous. It sounds it does sound like it's going in completely different directions. And case in point, the song Approximate, which pops up a lot throughout, you know, his career, because it's a song that's meant to be played kind of spontaneously in different. I think everybody's in a different key, or everybody's in a different time signature. It's a strange song, but on the Helsinki concerts, which is the You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore, Volume 2, they do a version of Approximate, which is a very, very hard black page type precision song. But in the middle of it, he basically, it's almost like he breaks through this stained glass window with this guitar solo that absolutely takes your breath away. And it is so unique. And it's like nothing I'd ever heard before. And that's a song that I actually play to people to give them an idea of his technical skill as a composer and a conductor, because this is his 74 band, and you know how he sort of conducts his own bands, and also his guitar playing, because the two solos that are in Approximate are just mind melting, and they're guitar solos like I've never heard before, stuck in the middle of a song that is like no other, and you know that's just that's just magic.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say something, then I'm going to give it back to Dan, because I know you did a reaction to Approximate, which mm-hmm. I'll have you talk about in a second. To me, what really differentiates Zappa as a guitar player is his understanding of harmony and that sort of thing. So you're talking about, you know, blues players playing a specific way. And what he has done, and he self-taught himself, I think he went to school for like 3 lessons and then just went to a library and learned himself. And of course he loved 20th century classical. So he really took a lot of that material and that expansion of harmony into areas that nobody else goes to. And that's where you hear it in his guitar playing. When you say that he reaches for notes or that nobody else does, it's because of his understanding of harmony and 20th century harmony. Now, Approximate is really what they call aleatoric music. Aleatoric music is something where it's sort of by chance, where you have some sort of structure. A rhythmic structure, and then people can play different notes and things like that. And mm-hmm. now I'm going to take it over to Dan, because I saw this reaction video you did to Approximate, and you basically just fell out laughing. You loved it so much. So talk to us about that particular reaction.
I mean, just the idea of that song is just genius, and it's just something that I feel like only Frank would really think to do. It's just so funny. Like, the guy is just so smart. He just operates intellectually on just a totally different level. You know, like other people, like if they're if they're composing a song, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I could put this note here. I could put this note would fit well here. And he's just like, you know what? We're not going to do it like that. I'm just going to give you the rhythm. We're just going to have fun with it. And we're all good musicians. Every week. Oh.
Sorry. That was my fault.
That was fun. That was like a little punctuation mark at the end of the sentence, you know? But yeah, no, I just thought it was genius. And it's like, it's so funny. Like, it's almost, he's so smart that it's almost like, sometimes I feel like he's just like kind of like messing with the listener in a way. And I feel like that's just a perfect example of just like, he understands music to such a degree that he's just able to do things like that. That, I mean, who else would even think of doing that, really? Like, I mean, obviously, I'm sure it's happened before. I don't have, you know, as much knowledge about classical music as I'm sure that you do. But especially seeing it in a rock context, it just completely blew my mind to see that and to know that, because that kind of thing is even possible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do have a little bit of more understanding along that lines. I'm also a church organist and choir master and all that sort of stuff. So I do all that too, but the thing about Zappa that I love is just this molding of every style of music that he ever loved into something that is unique. It's like he's a cook in a kitchen, right? And he's got a little bit of blues, he's got a little bit of doo-wop. Oh, we'll throw in this Stravinsky in there, and we'll do this. And to me, that makes his music alive. It doesn't matter, you know, that he's been dead now for 28 years. He would be 81 today if he were still alive. But the music still lives. And this is what I really love about the reaction videos, is to see this music and to see a younger generation, you know, you being 27 and Sifa being about the same age, that you have, you know, the music still lives. It still gives off this vibe that you react to. Now, one other thing I want to get into as we start to get to the hour here is his messaging and his lyrics and his sort of satire that he does too, because this is a part of his music too. And I've got a song I don't think you've ever heard. And this is called Your Mouth. This is off the Hot Rats album. Or no, excuse me, I think it's Waka Chewaka. But this is a short one, but I want you to listen to the lyrics of this and see what you think.
Yes.
Dan, have you ever heard that one before?
That one I have not heard.
Yeah, that I love that first line, man. Your mouth is your religion, and you put your face in a hole like that. That is a great friggin' line. I was, what, about 16 when I first heard this? And I love this man. I love what he says. I love his attitude. So the idea here is, or the question here is, what about his attitude? You know, I mean, there are certain people that will say he's very misogynistic toward women or whatever the case would be. But
I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily see it like that, because what I've noticed seeing Frank just in interviews and just like, you know, in other videos and just him talking is he's always pretty much the smartest person around. Like, it's clear that his level of intelligence is a lot higher than like most of the people that he's talking to in like interviews and stuff like that. And it just seems like his tolerance for bullshit is so non-existent. And he just sees through bullshit everywhere, like whether it be, you know, government, you know, religious organizations, just people doing stupid things, you know, culture. He just sees through all the bullshit, and he has no problem calling it out no matter what it is. And sometimes he, you know, he uses words that are a little shocking just to kind of, I think, bring more attention to it. I don't think he's necessarily, you know, I don't think he's, you know, condoning the things he's saying or thing, you know, necessarily like that. But sometimes you have to be a little outrageous to bring light to your point. And Frank understood that, and he was a genius at it. Just like, I mean, he's a genius, period. But he was obviously great at that. And that's one of the things I love about him. Like, not only can he be so smart, but he can also be really funny about it at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Pat, what do you think about, you know, his messaging and what he says to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Frank's heart was always in the right place. And I just think that I don't think there was any one particular group that he seemed to have a disdain more than another. I think he was somewhat misanthropic towards a certain kind of conformity. And like Dan said, he didn't have much of a tolerance for bullshit. And that contempt comes through in his music, but it was a real anger that he had with society and everything that was happening with, especially when he got into the 80s. But I think his heart was in the right place. I mean, I think he was fighting for a good cause. I don't think that, he meant any real harm with a lot of the language that he used. I mean, I think that like when you get into the Flo and Eddie stuff and then beyond, some of that stuff gets a little juvenile. But, you know, just because Russ Meyer liked Big Tits didn't mean he wasn't a genius. So, I mean, you know. I even though I think that his stuff can be shocking and provocative on first blush, and especially if you go in cold, I think that some people might be bothered by it. But I think the more you dig into his legacy and his message and really what he was about, I think that all of that stuff sort of melts away, really.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about Zappa, you know, when he first started, and this is in the early 60s, he was in L.A., and the hippie culture was basically in San Francisco, and he was very anti-hippie. And the first album is Freak Out. He was part of the freaks. He was part of the subculture, and where it really became his message was when he went to New York and to the Garrick Theater in 67, where, you know, he had these stage shows. And there's a great story of him handing a baby doll to a Vietnam soldier who was in the audience and basically told him to kill the gook baby. And he really, what he was doing was shining lights on various prejudices and so on and so forth. And he always had this sort of like, he always looked at things as an observer. He never, I mean, it's not that he didn't participate in it, but as you know, he was not a, he didn't do drugs very, very seldom. I think he admitted to doing like two or three joints every so often. But he wasn't into that at all. He was very much a control freak, and he very, very much controlled his message and controlled what he wanted to be out there. I'm sure it wasn't easy being one of his band members, and I've heard many, many stories over the years. But those people that understood him and loved him and part of his band for years have nothing but great things to say about him. And to me, that's a lot of what the message is about, and so on and so forth. So as we go along, I'm going to just pass it along back to you, Dan, and just any last thoughts or anything like that as far as Zappa and where you want to go from here with what you're doing on the reaction videos with him.
I don't like, well, it's hard to even really, you know, sum up. I mean, Zappa, I mean, he's just so impressive. Like everything that he's done, his prolificness. And this is the thing, like, you know, like we've been saying, you know, we've been doing these reactions for a couple months now. We're still relatively new into the Zappa world. And I just want to discover all the rest that there is to discover. I mean, there's still so much. I mean, what, he put out like 120 albums or something? Like, how many did he put out when he was alive, and then how many came out post?
It was like 81 when he was alive, and now it's well over 200. Seriously.
That's insane.
As I said, there's so much in the vault. It's crazy. It's crazy how much is still, because he recorded basically every concert he ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, improv. So you know, if you go, I saw him five times, and you'd hear some of the same songs, but they'd be different each time he did it.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be the same band, or even if it was the same band, the next night would be completely different. You know,
right.
And that's the great thing about him. How about you, Pat? If you were to try to define Zappa, how would you be able to do it? And if so, how?
I don't know if I'd be able to define him, but I would say that if I were trying to get somebody into Zappa and they said, give me one album, I would say that the posthumously released the Leather album is really a good place to start in terms of summing up just all what he could do. You know, the
Absolutely.
Leather album.
Now, I'm going to interrupt here. I'm going to interrupt here because we have a caller. So we're going to get this caller in just a moment. Hello, caller. You're in. This is Carl. What,
hello.
Who is this?
Carl is this Sifa. Thank you so much
Sifa,
for having me.
You're here. Yay.
Hello.
Ooh.
Happy holidays.
Hello, hello, hello.
Happy Zappamas to you.
Absolutely. So,
oh my
so Sifa, introduce yourself and talk about what – this is perfect because now I was going to get it over to Dan to talk about Sight After Dark. So why don't you both tell us a little bit about what you guys do?
Yeah, I'm so glad to call in. I feel like sometimes Frank Zappa is this advanced class that you kind of know that you can do, but then you feel like lost in it, and you feel like, am I doing this right? Like, that's how I always feel. Like, am I listening right? Am I hearing right? Am I looking right? Like, I don't want to feel like a total idiot, and I know that. I somehow know that Frank doesn't want his listeners to feel like idiots, but sometimes I just feel so underqualified, but I do get him in some weird way. And And I'm just very appreciative to be able to listen to him and to get into his world. I really wanted to say that first and foremost. Also, when I called in, you guys were talking about misogyny, and I didn't necessarily see him as misogynistic. I just feel like, and maybe some women might get mad at me, he came in a time when, like, roles were really defined for, you know, the male and the female, even though it was like the 60s and the 70s. And I personally don't think that there's anything wrong with us. I think there's men give different energy and females and women give different energies, and that's a great balance. So it's like if he says certain things and like, you're not to take it too offensively, because it's just what it is, and we balance each other out. So I don't necessarily, he's misogynistic. Like, I feel like if his daughter was to say, "Dad, I'm interested in joining the fire department," I don't think he would be the man to be like, "You can't do that," like, you know. So I just wanted to say that too.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
Eva, we didn't get a chance to talk to you in terms of, and you're talking a little bit about feeling under, you know, that you don't feel as comfortable maybe with listening to Zappa, but in seeing you react and that sort of thing, you say some wonderful things. So tell us how you have reacted and what you think of Zappa.
I go from what I'm feeling in that exact moment, and I wish I could parallel it. Like, I've been in many advanced classes in my life, and I've passed these classes, and I've done pretty well in these classes. And I obviously, because I've passed and done well, like, I've gotten the class, but I promise you, throughout the whole thing, I was just like, am I doing this right? Am I getting this? I hope this is okay. So I'm just going from the gut and what I read from his energy. Like, when I think about his face, even like his physical makeup, like, I like this person. Like, I am spiritually and like musically connected and attracted to this person, you know, just for that reason. So I feel like that's what kind of makes me get it, just because I'm like glued to that person because of his energy, because of Frank's energy, you know. And I feel like that's what comes across on the screen when we're doing the reaction videos, because I'm just going from like whatever energy like he put out to me. But at the same time, I'm just like, am I getting this? Like, is this what's being said? Is this what's happening? I still feel like that the whole way through. And I think that that's okay in a way, because that's kind of like how life is too. So it's like, you know, you're going through and yeah, you have a handle on it, but you're still like, I don't know sometimes. So I think it's a good thing, but I'm just telling you honestly, like, even though I'm going from the gut and even though it sounds right to like a lot of you Zappites, I'm still like, well, I hope I'm making sense.
You do quite well, my dear. Not a question there.
Absolutely.
I was saying earlier, to me, it's wonderful to see a younger generation react to older music, because I was your age or even younger when I was first introduced to Zappa. I mean, I was telling Dan, it's been almost 50 years now since I was first introduced to his music and knew who he was. And just to see the reactions are that's what fascinates me. Because for me, and I think I speak for both Pat and I, since we're older generations, to me, I've always felt that it's the passing along of music and of art and the things we love. And I'm also very involved in film too. That's the important thing that the younger generation knows. And to see it in these reaction videos just makes me so happy. Seriously.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to thank both of you for doing this. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I mean, it's literally our pleasure and our honor, so
yeah,
don't even mention
it. Literally.
Pat,
I want to throw one thing out.
Okay,
real quick. Sometimes I feel like, I've never thought this with any other artist, but, you know, I spoke earlier about how Frank is just obviously so smart and such an intellectual, where sometimes I'm listening to his songs and it feels like the songs are breaking the fourth wall, like the songs know that they're songs. Would you, you know what
I'm saying? I know exactly what you're saying because he did break the fourth wall. One of the things, you never got to see him live, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You see these live videos, but to see him live and to experience the idea of hearing one song of one part, one style, to something completely different the next time and then doing, you know, throwing in Stravinsky or Ravel's Bolero and then throwing in something completely different, you know, if you're an audience at it, I don't think any other audience other than the Zappa audience knows what being at a Zappa concert really is. And he played with his audience. One of the stories I have is I went to see him in Pittsburgh. And I got there and it was 3,000 people or something like that at the old forget where it was in Pittsburgh. I think it was at, I can't remember. But anyway, here he is. He comes out on stage, and he has the paper with him. And he starts just reading the paper. About 20 minutes later, you start hearing boos and that sort of thing. People start getting walking out, that sort of thing. And suddenly he puts the paper down and says, well, now that all the real fans are here, band comes out, they don't stop playing for 2.5 hours. Great.
Yeah.
Love
it.
Yeah. And he did that a lot. He played with his audience. He loved his audience. And you're right about the fourth wall. You're absolutely right. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. And I think that was all what you were saying earlier about the project object was also what he would call his conceptual continuity, where all of his stuff would relate to each other, and that in and of itself is playing with the audience, because that's only those are like in jokes that he's only sharing with friends, like the inclusion of Louie that in songs like throughout his, you know, his whole body of work, and other little bits and musical lines and characters that would pop up and stuff. You know, that is very much for the audience's sake. He wants you to pick those clues out. He wants you to be part of that experience of the conceptual continuity. So, yeah, very much so, I agree.
So one of the things I do want to do before we get off the phone and off the studio and off the podcast is talk a little bit about what you guys do, because I actually have a song of yours I'm going to play so that our audience gets to know. And, of course, that's Moongaze, which is your theme song to your reaction videos. So tell us a little bit about Sight After Dark and how you guys got together.
Okay. You can go for it, Dan.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, so basically I moved to New York City a few years ago to start a band. I didn't know anybody. Sifu is from Brooklyn, so she was already in the city. And I was just going around open mics trying to start a band. And then eventually Sifu and I just met at an open mic. And then like ever since then, you know, we always had the same, you know, vision for what, you know, our music should be and what music we wanted to make. And really, like, at the end of the day, you know, we want to make music that we would want to listen to, you know? We're not just trying to, like, you know, do a certain style or anything like that. So, you know, all the different musical genres that we listen to, you know, find their way into our music. The song that you have is from an album that we put out before we even heard any Zappa. So there's not going to be much of a Zappa influence in it if you're looking for something like that. As time goes on, you know, I can't imagine Frank not kind of creeping into our music a little bit, but it's been, you know, quite a journey in the past, whatever, 2-3 years from just meeting randomly at, you know, an open mic in whatever the Lower East Side to, you know, making our own music to discovering all this new music from all these reactions. And, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, we've only really been listening and really getting deep into Frank for, you know, not even a year now. So just the fact that you guys that have been listening to Frank for so long would, you know, see what we're doing and connect with it and want us to be on the podcast for Frank's birthday. I mean, it's really like, it's crazy. And, you know, we really appreciate that. And, you know, we, I don't know, it's just great. It's just love all around.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Frank does. I think, as I said, I think he reaches out to everybody. And Sipa, do you have anything to add before I have our audience listen to your wonderful voice on Moongaze?
Well, this is Moongaze. Cider After Dark, we pretty much balance each other out. Our strengths and our weaknesses balance each other out, and I feel like this is sometimes when you can hear it, and you can hear it on all our other songs on our album, Waves for Days. This one is just me singing, and this is all Dan in the studio. This is his production. So this is one way that we balance each other out really, really well.
Okay, so we're going to listen to Moongaze by Cider After Dark, and Patrick and I will have – we'll do our own reaction video here, or at least reaction audio.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
All right. Thank you.
very, very nice. I actually listened to most of the album, and I just want to say that that's not just truly indicative of the album. There's rap on there. There's a number of different stylisms in that. So you guys are definitely doing some, you're experimenting, and I think that's always a good thing. Pat, what did you think of that?
Oh, I really dug that. I thought that was I loved the ethereal tone of that. I thought it was very moody, and I like that it sort of had a light vibe to it. But yeah, I really dug that quite a bit. Nice work.
Thank you so much.
As we end up here, I'm going to play one more song of Zappa's, but before we end up. But any final thoughts from either you Dan, or you, Sifa? About playing?
I used to think that no one could write that much, and I know I'm most likely not going to be able to hear every single thing that he's done, but I really, really look forward to digging so much deeper into his catalog, like, and just not necessarily understanding him, but just like getting to hear more, you know, because if he took the time, you know what I'm saying, we're not talking about some idiot, like, you know what I'm saying, so if he took the time to actually construct a piece, like, it's well worth listening to, and there's so many of them, so I just really look forward to that.
How about you, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with everything that Sifa said, but, and this is something I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think the biggest thing with Frank that I realize is, like, he's just so much more than a rock musician. I mean, I said this earlier, but, like, just to call him a rock musician or to call him a rock star is really selling him short, because he's mm-hmm. just a master composer. He's a master musician of all kinds, all genres, and his what he's able to do is just able to spread so many genres, and it's just so all-encompassing that I don't know. I really feel like there's something that everybody can like it somewhere. You know what I mean? It's just so impressive that he's been able to do so much. And, you know, he probably could have been able to do so much more, but I don't want to get into that. So it's sad, obviously. But just that he was able to be so prolific and cover so much ground is just so impressive to me. And I just can't really get over that.
Absolutely. Pat, I'm going to send it to you. You have So really think about this. What do you want to say about Zappa as being a fan for as long as you've have been and that sort of thing? What do you want to say to our audience about Zappa?
I just think that if you've never dipped a toe into his work, I think that there's no better time than the present. I think he is one of the most important musical figures of the 20th century, and it's just a wondrous, wondrous journey to go on to discover his music and to really luxuriate in it and absorb it. And that was such a truly, you know, rewarding experience for me. And it made me, again, think about things so differently, a lot of different things that I, you know, sort of went beyond just music too. It was just so unique. And I cannot express enough how important of an artist he was to me, and how just what a joy his body of work is. So, I mean, I cannot stress that enough. Get into it.
Yeah, for me, I have to say very simply, and I'm not joking about this, is that Frank Zappa changed my life. Frank Zappa, by listening to Zappa and experiencing and then learning from the things, you know, from the different people he would mention in his concerts, and just seeing him in concert and experiencing this music and this attitude, not just the music, but the man himself. Let's not forget that in the 80s, there was the Parents Music Resource Center, and you mentioned it a little bit about the Mothers of Prevention album that Baltimore is from. That was huge. He was a central figure in Czechoslovakia and was friends with Vaclav Havel, who was the president at the time, but also a dissident dramatist and playwright. He stood up for freedom and anti-censorship all across Eastern Europe. I mean, this man had a huge, huge impact. And to see all that and to grow up with that, and that one other story I want to say, when he died in 93, I was running a music store. And the day he died, I think I got at least 20 to 30 phone calls of people coming in, just basically looking at me like, are you all right? Are you okay? Do you want some Kleenex? You know, I mean, seriously, this is what he meant to me. And to, you know, the one thing I have to say is Pat, in our conversation said we ought to do something about Zappa. And I said, oh my God, it's the 21st. We'll do it for his birthday. And then to have you and Sifa on, Dan, and anyone who wants to really be introduced to his music, I suggest strongly to look at the reaction videos from Side After Dark, because you look at their reactions as you're listening to it for the first time, and I think you'll find common ground. I truly do. So I want to, again, thank both you and Sifa for being on, Dan. Really appreciate it. But before we go, this is the perfect song, I think, to end up on. And I don't know if either of you have ever heard this. This is off his Freak Out album. And we're going to do You're Probably Wondering Why I'm Here. So just a moment. Let me get there. Takes a second. Here we go.
Ouch.
Love that song. Have you guys ever heard that one before?
No, I definitely haven't, though.
I haven't heard that one. I love the kind of mod sound of it, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought we would at least try to introduce a couple new songs for you so you have some ideas maybe to do on your reaction videos. So I'm going to give you some time to really promote what you do. So please give us where you can buy the album, your sites on YouTube and your website, and give us the whole shot here.
All right, Sifa, you want me to do it or you want to go for it?
I want you to do it, Dan.
Okay, let's go. All right, so Sight After Dark, SIGHT, After Dark. You can find our music wherever you stream music. You can buy our first album, Waves for Days, on Bandcamp. It was very DIY. The whole album was actually recorded on my iPhone. So that's kind of a cool little backstory of it. But we talk about that in the album as well, so you would hear the whole story. Obviously, like we're talking about, we do all these reaction videos on our YouTube channel, Sight After Dark. If you go to YouTube, you type in Sight After Dark, we should be the only thing that comes up. Anyone else is an imposter, all right? That's pretty much it. If you want to get involved in the reactions, definitely check us out, patreon.com/Sight After Dark. You know, that's where the best place to, you know, suggest new songs for us to do and new videos for us to do. But yeah, we're just going to be making music and videos all throughout the new year. As time goes on, we're already working on a new EP to put out this year. So that's going to be some great stuff. And we're always trying to push the envelope.
Keep us in contact with us on anything new and let us know. And we'll definitely have you on. No question about it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I should also say we have our own podcast as well. So we have a podcast called Music Maniacs with Sight After Dark, where we talk about, you know, various musical subjects. We haven't done one on Frank yet. Obviously, we will at some point. It just hasn't come up yet. But we're always doing things. We actually have a Tom Petty episode coming out tomorrow. So you can check that out, Music Maniacs with Sight After Dark, in addition to all the other great things that we've been talking about. That's pretty much it. Music, videos, and just good vibes all around.
All right. So just to give you an idea of what we're doing here at Deviant Legion, tomorrow is our sort of like Christmas party. And so we're going to have everyone that's involved with Deviant Legion, including all our hosts and guests. And, of course, Patrick, you're welcome to call in and say hello. But what we're going to do is basically just have a good time. We're going to talk about our favorite gift that we ever received, our favorite gift that we've ever given, and a gift that we would like to give to someone if we could afford it or whatever the case would be. And that's sort of like everybody that I care about will be on the podcast. So it's special for me, particularly. There's one other thing. We do have another podcast scheduled for Thursday to be recorded. However, that may not happen because Adam, our host of Cathode Ray Mission, has got COVID. But we were going to be talking about Robert Altman's Tenor 88, and I was scheduled to be on that show. But I got to check with Adam tomorrow and see how he's doing to see whether or not we're going to be doing that. I'm sure we're going to be doing some things with John Killian in between Christmas and New Year's. We want to do a wrap-up show on his network, which is XV Planets. So we'll also be involved with that. And that's basically what we have. I also have some very, very sad news to relate. I am involved with Incredibly Strange Films as an admin. This is the largest film site on Facebook, and we have over 400,000 members. Unfortunately, our grand poobah, David Whittington, passed away, and we just found out about it today. So I just wanted to say my condolences to David, family, and friends, and to everyone
I speak for everyone at Incredibly Strange Films that it's a great loss for us. And we certainly will be doing a memorial podcast more likely in the middle of January. I'm already in contact with some of his family and that sort of thing. We're trying to get that together for like mid-January. So that's what we have planned. Just want to wish everyone a happy holiday season and Merry Christmas and happy Kwanzaa and everything. Just have a great holiday. Dan and Sipa, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. Really appreciate it. And Patrick, as always, you're my right-hand man when it comes to these things, particularly Zappa. And thank you so much. By the way, we didn't really give you a chance at what you're doing and that sort of thing. So talk to us about anything in Patrick Crane land that's happening out in Oklahoma City.
Well, nothing much other than I have finished up my Altman essays, and I'm starting to publish the last bit of his career over at podcastingthemsoftly.com starting tomorrow. I'm going to post a film per day, except for on Saturday and Sunday, and that will begin tomorrow with Kansas City, and then on New Year's Eve will be my final essay for Prairie Home Companion. I will be then republishing everything over on my site, apollotwin.com, on January the 1st or thereabouts. It's when that site will really start having content on it, and all of my stuff that I write will be going through that site. But for the remainder of the year, my Altman pieces will still remain on Podcasting Them Softly. And like I said, Kansas City is tomorrow, and I'm going to be posting one per day, except for Saturday and Sunday, ending with Prairie Home Companion on New Year's Eve, which is apropos. So that's all that's going on.
Okay, fair enough. Well, listen, folks, really appreciate everyone coming on, and Dan and Sipa, thank you so much. And I think at this point it's time to say good night.
Good night and happy birthday to Frank.
Absolutely. Happy birthday. I got to do this. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Yes, it's the Mormon Tubercular Choir. That works for me. All right. All right. Good night, people. Thank you, Dan, Sipa, Patrick.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you for having us.
Good night.